cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the SME Showcase section of our Business Masterclass. Joining me in studio is Carl Bates. We're going to be chatting to him about his experience in creating the Serdar Group, Africa's leading educator, appointer, and guide of high-performance boards for privately held and family businesses. Welcome, Carl.
Thanks very much, Richard, for having me.
Great to have you with us. I've had a long association with you. Our company, the company that I'm the CEO of, the finance team, and the Serdar Group have had a relationship going back a number of years.
Yes, and I've always
been interested in the history of the Serdar Group. And I think many people go, the Serdar Group? Like, what is Serdar? I mean, what is that? So perhaps just as we start out today, can you share with us what is Serdar, or what is a Serdar?
Yes.
Okay. And then a little bit about the business, what the business does, and we can take it from there.
Okay, great. So a Serdar is the name given to the lead Sherpa on a mountain expedition. So where others see a mountain of difficulty, the Serdar sees a clear path of opportunity. They choose the right route, decide on the team, and know when to go for the summit. And our role at the Serdar Group is literally to be the Serdar, the guide for high-performance boards here in Africa and indeed around the world, to enable them to be educated, to appoint the right people to those boards, and to guide them on the journey. And we've been doing that for over 10 years, originally in New Zealand, or still in New Zealand as our home base. I'm a New Zealander, as you know.
We can hear that, Carl.
And it started a number of years back when I got appointed to a board as an independent director back when I was very young, actually, at the age of 18. Got blessed with an opportunity to become an independent director, and then another couple of opportunities for large multi-billion rand organizations in New Zealand. And ultimately, it led to saying, hold on a minute, the role of a high-performance board is something that private companies should use as much as public companies, but we don't. Mm. And I realized that we don't because we don't educate private company and family businesses on the value a board can offer. And from there, we built the Serdar Group into the organization that leads that space, as you say, in Africa.
Okay. So just give us a bit of a profile of the group. So obviously, we've been going since
2006. We got the name Serdar in 2007.
Okay.
Been in Africa, in South Africa specifically, since 2008. And we work all over the African continent.
Okay, so a true African, Pan-African exposure.
In fact, I'm flying to Ghana tomorrow for a client meeting.
Okay, always fun. Always fun living on aeroplanes. Now, I mean, why did you decide to focus on directorships? There are many ways to add value to companies. Why the specific focus on, let's call it a governance function, and then on this principle of a directorship? What was unique about that really caught your attention?
So I think that comes very much from why we exist as an organization. We exist because we want to achieve this thing called meaningful economic impact. We believe the only way to shift countries from one level of performance to another is through economic impact. And the only way to truly achieve sustainable economic impact is to create companies that are profitable and sustainable and growing. And the role of a board is at the core of that in any business, in any country on the planet. And we don't think that privately held companies and family businesses truly understand that and create effective boards that add value. And so we wanted to be the guide to enable directors to be effective in what they do, be practical in what they do, and deliver results. And I think a lot of the discussion and education around directors here in South Africa and indeed around the world is very theory-based or law-based and very focused on, do you understand the codes?
Do you understand what keeps you out of jail, almost? It's almost reactive. I always call it, you know, the orange jumpsuit moments. You know, what gets you the orange jumpsuit and what doesn't, and where your line is.
And to some degree, start to remove the concept of risk and return. Whereas a director needs to also understand the practical value that they add, through doing things like keeping regular meetings, through having a debate with management about regularity of board meetings. You know, I had a discussion recently with a listed company in South Africa who said, no, we have quarterly board meetings because that's the most effective we can create value for our shareholders. I said, well, it's interesting that every Australian counterpart in your industry, and I won't name the industry for sake of confidentiality, but in the specific industry this business was in, has 11 to 13 board meetings a year as listed companies significantly larger than they were. And they went, no, but clearly they don't create value. And they're one of the highest performing shares on the Australian Stock Exchange. So I think often we miss the practical value of the role of a private company board or the role of a board. And we miss the practical elements that drive that value creation. And we wanted to bring that to the table. You know, a Sardar doesn't climb the mountain because they've been great at reading theory on mountaineering. They climb the mountain and reach the summit because they know the mountain.
I was going to say, I think for me, so the parallels are quite striking, because the reality is many people set off on this journey. It's kind of like saying, okay, and I'm not going to pick Everest because we all know that's quite a hectic one. But let's say, you know, a Kilimanjaro climb. And it's like, okay, I'm going to climb Kili this weekend. Yet we set off to be a company director by signing the piece of paper, and we think we're okay.
Exactly.
We're just going to run off. So I hear that identification of the need in the market, and I do think that is so critical in the bigger picture of let's call it corporate South Africa and success within South Africa. Now, I mean, in terms of governance, I mean, we've talked about, so there's this huge focus on governance as a, let's call it as a discipline that wasn't there years ago. And I think over time, governance has stepped up and up. And I mean, you know, the one king report, the next king report, you know, we're on to king four now. And, and what I found particularly interesting is how we seem to be moving away from almost, let's call it process and procedural stuff. And, you know, you need this, you need that, you need the next thing in the king reports, to almost now a, yes, I could call it a value-based conversation that King is driving and value-based engagement. I mean, what is your view on where governance is going? I mean, okay, so let's first talk in the global context, and then let's get back to the South African context. Where is governance globally?
So my view on governance globally is that it is missing the majority of businesses that actually will make the significant difference. So I've had this debate with chief executives of IODs around the world, where I say...
Sorry, just to clarify, IOD, Institute of Directors.
Thank you. With Institute of Directors around the world, that the problem with the conversation about governance isn't the code, whether it's the King Code or the Mauritius Code of Corporate Governance or. The problem is a marketing problem around the value of a high-performance board at a private company. And our clients, the people that we're working with, the private families, the private businesses, who probably don't have a board 9 times out of 10 when we get involved with them, or may have a board, but it's not really functioning. They're actually never going to read the code. What they've got to understand is the value of having a board in the first place. And I see our role as the Sardar Group in saying to someone, you want to climb Kilimanjaro, we have climbed Kilimanjaro, let us practically show you how to get there. I suppose, you know, taking the Kilimanjaro sort of discussion a step further, there's a small group of people globally that are having real environmental, you know, development protection conversations. You know, it's not the mass market that's having the discussion about should we protect Kilimanjaro or not. But there is a group doing good work, like good work in the governance space. But the majority of people aren't involved in that conversation. They don't even understand why they should be until they've been on the mountain and been to the summit. And I see our job, if I can frame it this way, as getting people onto that mountain and getting them to the summit. So to answer your question, I think the conversation globally and here in South Africa about governance is too high level for the people and the businesses that actually make the impact. It's focused on listed companies. It's focused on very, very large private businesses. And it's not focused on engaging the mass market in an effective way.
Now, the one thing that always worries me about governance is we really struggle, and particularly if we bring it closer to home, we struggle with governance at a, let's call it, at a political level in the country, and we all know the challenges that we face there.
Yes.
And, you know, let's call it government institutions, state-owned enterprises. And then we make this jump from, let's call it, the public sector space into the private sector space.
Yes.
And you've got this... you got the various codes, King, etc., and expectations around what directors should do, and it's a little bit of a dissonance that private and family companies must have as they look. Let me use the analogy: as they look up at the role models. On the one side, you've got the listed sector, which has got a whole lot of good quality governance things happening. And not that they're perfect. Don't get me wrong. I'm not pretending that the capitalist system has absolutely perfect people. But by and large, there's quite a strong sense of accountability and good governance. And then you look to the left and you look at state-owned enterprises and government institutions. And I mean, I'm appalled every time I see an Auditor General report and think to myself, you know, in the real world, these entities don't actually make it. They don't cut the grade. Yet, unfortunately, we as the taxpayer end up having to write the check to support this stuff. And the time will come when the state coffers cannot support, and you'll start having, let's call it, organizational and state failures on some of those delivery fronts because there's just no money to go around. But, you know, I kind of sit there and put myself in their shoes and say to myself, it's really difficult when you're told, you know, governance is important. And you look at the people at the top and you say, but they're getting away with all sorts of naughty things, so to speak. I mean, that must be a very difficult space to operate in. You've got this environment that says almost at and unfortunately, it's often in the, let's call it the non-capitalist space, the private the public space, and the political space of anything goes.
Well, look, I think there's a number of things that come out of that, and I don't want to comment too much on what's going on public sector in South Africa, other than say I come from a country where I think there's a few things that could be learned around what we call in New Zealand the Crown Monitoring Unit, which is the body responsible for directors of public institutions. Mm-hmm. And it creates a distinction between the political influence and the effective governance of those institutions. And I think it's something that could be copied and used here in South Africa. But that's
it sounds like something else we should be copying from New Zealand.
Yes, exactly.
We copy so much else, but yeah.
I think the key, though, and I often say this to our private clients, is just like a plumber isn't automatically the best person to run a plumbing firm. Mm. And just like a baker is not the best person to run a bakery, you know, a politician isn't necessarily the best person to run a country, but that's a whole discussion in and of itself. The point is, when I talk to a private company or a family business about their board and they say, but look at that, I always say to them, forget about the look at that. Let's look at you. Do your shareholders want to make more money? Do your stakeholders want better outcomes? And if the answer to either of those questions is yes, then have a look at the value a board can offer your business. Whether or not John is doing it down the road or the public health system is working or failing doesn't change whether or not you can choose to change something in your business.
So what I'm hearing there is you're saying move away from governance as a reason to have a board and say, well, governance is just, let's call it an outcome from doing this, but you have boards and directors for other reasons, and those are very sound, rational business reasons.
Yeah.
And there's just an added benefit that it's just the good governance part just flows from it.
Well, put it this way. Good governance is the operating system.
Okay.
It's not why you do it. You don't create a board because you want to have good governance. You create a board because you want to have a better outcome for the business, whether that be succession planning, whether that be a transition from one generation to the next, whether it be you wanting to sell your business and have it in a better state to sell it, you want it to be making more money, you want to deal with stakeholder issues you haven't really dealt with because you haven't understood them, you want to position your business for growth in Africa, you want to get an international perspective. You know, there are a whole lot of business-driven reasons why your privately held company or family business would consider having a board. My problem with the word governance is it's too often associated with the context of compliance. Mm. What it's important to understand is the role of a board is to drive performance and conformance. And if you're on the same page, then you're right in the place to have a conversation about the role of a high-performance board.
Mm. So, yeah, let's talk about that a little more, because obviously, you know, there's a cost to having an independent non-executive director or yes. two in your business, and you've now got to trade off that cost and see what the benefits to the business are. So, quantify for me kind of some of the experiences you've had. I mean, you know, what sort of growth numbers do you see, you know, kind of let's call it pre this exercise and post? I mean, in your clients, you must have the good old rule of thumb that says, hey, listen, if we engage with you, we know on a conservative basis that by going through this process with us, you can see a lift in your performance by X or Y percent.
Yes. So I think the first thing to say is it's not a cost, it's an investment. If your independent directors are not delivering more value to your bottom line than you would get by not paying it, or rather, you know, let me rephrase that. If your independent directors aren't delivering more value to the business than what it's costing,
mm-hmm.
then they're not doing the job.
Yeah.
Simple as that. There's therefore a problem with the way the board's been run or the independent directors themselves or the methodology you're using, etc. Secondly, you are wasting your money if you are appointing directors to hear what you want to hear. So we've had some clients who haven't had results that I would have liked them to achieve. I think primarily in a big part because they weren't prepared to shift the space. When the board says you've got it wrong, they were listening.
Mm.
That said,
I was going to say, I mean, that must be really difficult to deal with as a business owner. I employ Sirdar. You help me appoint a functional board, and 18 months in, they tell me something that I didn't know and possibly don't want to know.
Yes.
That must be really tough as the independent non-execs and as Sirdar to have to deal with that scenario.
I think what becomes even more difficult is when you listened to that advice, you took action, and then when you're having the conversation 3 months later about whether or not your board's delivering value, you say, no, but I took the action. Well, Richard, you are the chief executive. It is your job to take the action. You know, people forget the role of the board is to engage the thinking, to drive the questioning, to hold you accountable. You do the doing, not the board. So, yeah, there are some interesting and tough conversations we have from time to time with clients around the value that their board has offered.
Mm.
But to answer your question directly, the outcome of the board process in terms of value depends on the reason you're doing it.
Mm.
So investing in a board, for example, for succession planning, might not have a growth multiple that it delivers in terms of value, but has a fact that it is now transitionable in terms of succession that when you were there by yourself, it wasn't.
Mm.
So you've got to understand the reason.
Yeah. So let's just talk about, and I'd like to explore that little side option because I've thought about boards and succession planning and the like. How does that effectively run? Because fundamentally, I guess in the business, you've got to replace yourself in terms of technical skills, etc. But I guess the board ultimately helps at a leadership level, I guess. Give me some examples, some things that you've experienced in this, where this has been done successfully.
Look, a good chairman in a transition process does everything from eases out the chief executive who needs to leave. So sometimes the role of the board is helping the shareholder manager understand that it's time to leave their own business because they've hit their ceiling.
It's time to go.
Yeah. And we've been involved with clients where that's exactly what we've helped them do and help them earn some big multiples and big checks in the process. Other times, it's the shareholder manager wanting to stay on, but needing to go through a process of transition and needing someone who becomes the sort of independent mediator between the old and the new in that process. Part of that can be about just guiding them through the process. Sometimes it can be kicking them into the appointment process for the chief executive. You know, we have a client who eventually the chairman of the board said to the shareholder manager, we're going to meet every Friday at 11 a.m. until this new chief executive is appointed. And it was what kicked the shareholder manager into the process of actually finding the right person, relieving himself and enabling himself to go off and focus on what it is that he wanted to do. So the transition process is a critical part of a good board for companies that are looking for that as one of the outcomes. And I suppose ultimately, any board will have to deal with transition at some stage in its life cycle.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about, let's call it the objectives of SIDA. I mean, you've talked now about succession planning as one of the key outcomes that you can facilitate. What are the others? We've talked about governance and that. What are the other elements that you drive?
So we drive, everything we drive relates directly to the board. So whether it be the accountability of management, the financial planning, strategic planning, the role of the board in ensuring an effective rhythm, the shareholder returns, all of the through the boardroom. So we don't do the management engagement in those spaces, if that's the question you're asking.
Yeah.
Our role is very much around the education of privately held companies and family businesses, the shareholder managers around the value of a board, and independent directors around how to be a great independent director. Because one of the things we haven't spoken about today yet is the value of being a great independent director. And many of us think that because we've been a great manager, because we've been a chief executive, because we've been a great business owner, we know how to be an independent director. And that's a fundamentally flawed concept. So, you know, one of the things we do in our education activity is drive effective development of independent directors. And we have a great program called the SIDA Applied Directorship Program, which is currently, we're in the process of getting new applications for next year. And that's a really valuable way of understanding practically what it means to be an independent director.
Mm. So I guess, I mean, and you do make the point of you're in the game of educating as well as let's call it providing a support system for businesses. And
yes.
And I think for me, there's also, I actually have to laugh when I think of it, but it's almost a case of, well, maybe I don't want to be a director of my own company and I'll go and help somebody else and get somebody else to come and help me, kind of thing, to get that independence into the system.
Well, funnily enough, that is the best way you'll learn what it means to be an independent director. So we look for people like yourself constantly to join our panel of independent directors.
By the way, this isn't a job pitch.
Just for that. But on a serious note, you will learn more about being an independent director sitting on someone else's board than you will sitting on your own.
Yeah.
And look, anyone can tweet us at SIDA SA Group or go onto our website, SIDAgroup.com, and send us an email about joining that panel.
Okay, and that's I think there's some interesting elements, and yeah, let's just go through that website address again, www.sirdar,
which is SIRDAR, group.com.
Okay. Yep. I think it's important that people realize that there's lots of opportunities out there, but ultimately, people will say, oh, well, who do I get to be an independent non-exec?
Come and chat to us if you're going to do that.
Yeah, come and chat, because the reality is that having, let's call it, a quality stamp on the people that you're engaging with is an important starting point. So I think that's one of the things that you clearly do.
Very much.
And also educating yourself as an person that's not an independent and non-exec, but even an executive director can use the learnings and the capabilities that you have in your environment to help you as an individual grow your capability in your own company. So I think there's a two-sided step to that education process. So I guess question for you, Carl. I mean, in the global economy per se. I mean, I'm seeing weakening economies worldwide, not just South Africa. There's lots of pressure in the system, which means that the pressure to perform is now really on. You know, I'll never forget the guys saying, I think it was Bernie in the States.
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, he said, when the tide goes out, that's the time when you see who's been swimming without any trunks. And it's a very good saying, because as the economic tide moves out, you can see companies that have just not been in a good position. They haven't positioned themselves well. They haven't skilled themselves appropriately. They don't have the right resourcing in place, etc. Now, that has an impact on the board environment and how people interact in that let's call it that bigger economic space. Where do you see success coming from in let's call it the global context? What's the let's call it the competitive edge that you see that companies should be thinking about at a kind of let's call it at a trend in a trend environment?
Yeah, well, as you know, I travel the world on a regular basis. And I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing in successful businesses is businesses willing to challenge the way they've done things. Not necessarily turn everything on their head, but being prepared to say we're missing something and we want to work it out. The businesses we're seeing failing, or the businesses we're seeing that are not achieving the sort of results that we believe they otherwise could, are the ones where the shareholder manager or the family say, but this is the way we run this business. Everything is happening to me. It's that sort of victim mode versus control of your own destiny. And I think the role of a board, and if you've got a great board and you're listening to them, is to bring that perspective and challenge and go, we're missing something. And here's some ideas. Here's the perspective. Here's what we're seeing. And for boards to have quality discussion about those questions.
Well, I think for me, it's the quality of the discussions that actually lifts the, let's call it, the lifts the environment per se.
Yes.
Now, what's plans with the Serdar Group? I mean, Carl, you're an accomplished writer. I've read some of your books.
Thank you.
With your launch on one.
Yes.
What are your future plans for Serdar and Carl Bates? Where do you guys go? Where to from here?
Well, look, I must say, we hugely appreciated the finance team's support along with Nolan's for the launch of the book Traversing the Avalanche. And if anyone does want to read a copy of that, you know, again, tweet us at Serdar SA Group or myself at Carl Bates. And if, by the way, anyone has any questions we haven't had an opportunity to answer, please tweet and we'll do our best to answer those over the next day or so. So the plans for the Serdar Group and for Carl Bates, we are very clearly positioning ourselves to continue to hold our space as the leader in Africa in terms of the education appointment and guidance of high-performance boards. We believe we can own that space globally, and that's the trajectory we're on. And that is what we're going to continue to fight for. We're looking for businesses constantly who are wanting to grow their performance, to improve their bottom line, to get shareholder value. You know, so many people spend their lifetime working in a business, slaving away in their company, spending the family fortune on making an idea successful, but don't quite get it there. And I just think that there's so much dream, or there's so many dreams and so many opportunities out there for people who have been on the journey of entrepreneurship, who've created a great company, but just aren't unlocking that value or leveraging that value to get people like the Serdar Group, if not the Serdar Group, in to support them to get that board, to provide that guidance and unlock that value. Because, you know, Richard, I know you travel around Africa a huge amount as well. If we want this continent to be the next space of global economic growth, which I believe it can be, you know, Africa's got so much opportunity, then we've got to unlock the value of the companies that are based here already.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, what really resonates with me with your comments there is, I do believe that for South Africa particularly, the unemployment situation that we have in this country is not going to be solved by corporates.
No.
It's not solved by government and parastatals. It can only be solved by the, let's call them the small and medium and enterprises out there that are actually able to create opportunities. And the only way they create job opportunities is as they create growth. So, yeah, I echo your sentiments there exactly. I think that's where that's the true, and ultimately that's the true powerhouse of Africa. That's where we come into our own. I think back to the good old Afrikaans saying, you know, where they say "Die Boer maak 'n plan."
Yeah,
and that is so true of South Africans. It's not just Afrikaans fraternity. All of Africa is very innovative and solution orientated as issues play out, and we really can solve so many of the issues out there and the problems, and we are very good, in fact, at solving many of the global issues. If you look at our history and some of the people that have left our shores and gone elsewhere in the globe to solve global problems and issues, so yeah, I echo your views on that one.
I think it's important to sort of reiterate a focus for the Sadar Group around this concept of meaningful economic impact. We have this saying within our team that good directors change companies, great directors change lives. And I think that for independent directors listening to this, if you see an opportunity to lift your game, understand the impact that that can have. And if you're a private company or a family business out there listening to this conversation, and going, we don't have a board, or we don't have an effective board, or we don't have a high-performance board. Understand that you're not doing your duty as part of the African story to lift your business to the space that it is creating the number of jobs that it can, that it is pushing the boundaries on economic growth, that it is growing into other countries and bringing revenue onto shore instead of just seeing revenue leave the shore. And I really implore you to challenge yourself as we go into 2017 about what 2017 is going to be for your business and the role a high performance board is going to play in making your company the best that it can be. Not because you just want more, or because your shareholders want more, or because you want to unlock your dream, but because of the impact that your company could have if it did.
I couldn't have said it better, Carl. Thank you. That's Carl Bates. He's joined us as our guest today talking about the Sirdar Group. Once again, that website,
www.sirdargroup.com.
Some great ideas there and ways to contact Carl. Thank you very much for your time today.
No worries at all.
Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform. CliffCentral.com.